Good day, and welcome to the NQF Pediatric Cardiac Surgery event. Please note today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to now turn the conference over to Ms. Ashley Wilbon. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. So good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being on this call this afternoon. This is the meeting or conference call for the Pediatric Cardiac Surgery Steering Committee to discuss the public and member comments on the measures submitted to the project as well as the draft report. I want to introduce our co-chairs on the call, Lisa Kaur and Howard Jeffries. My name is Ashley Wilbon. I'm here at NQF. Also in the room with me is Sarah Fanta. And Karen, do you want to introduce yourself?
Okay, I'm Karen Pace with NQF. I'm a senior director, and I'll be here to answer any questions about evaluation and process as needed.
Thanks. Okay. So for those of you that are on the webinar, I'm just going to pull up the agenda here. Once we get through the welcome and the agenda review, I'll move into just a quick recap of the work to date, where we are, what the next steps are, and then we'll just jump right into reviewing the draft report comments or the measure comments. Next steps, we'll open it up for public comments for those on the line, and then we'll adjourn. So that's the plan for today's call. Let me move into just doing a quick roll call to see who's on the call for the steering committee. Is Dr. Nancy Ganahan there? Daryl Gray? Alan Hinkle? Shanae Barnett-Jones? Okay. Sylvia Lopez? All right. Constantine Mavroudis? John Meyer, Lisa Nugent, Patricia Galvin. I wonder if
Can I interrupt you for a second? This is Gus Mavroudis. I didn't hear the responses of anyone. Is the phone set up so that I can't hear anyone else?
I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Did everyone say that they're here? That you called them out?
I think you're the only person who spoke so far, Dr. Mavroudis.
Well, it's not that I have a penchant for that. I just don't like to be in a situation I don't understand.
No, I think we don't have other folks on the line yet.
Okay, so they're not on the line then. Okay.
Yeah, so let me just check. Anthony, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, has anyone else dialed in that you can tell? I mean, from the list of people that I just...
Yes, we have about 3 participants in from that list with open lines.
Oh, okay.
We have Constantine is in. Sylvia Lopez.
Well, I never heard them say that they're there. So, is there something wrong with the system? Because it negates the process of a telephone call if I can't hear anyone else speak. I can hear you all, but I can't hear anyone else. For instance, is John Meyer on the line? And if he is, can he say hello?
Hello.
Hi, who's speaking?
This is Nancy Ganahan.
Oh, okay. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, I can hear Nancy. Fine. Okay. Thank you, Nancy. This is Gus.
Hi, Gus.
Hi.
It may be, too, that people are just now kind of trickling into the call.
Well, it looks like things are working. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Is Dr. Gray there? Because I know he was going to dial in.
Yeah, it definitely is not easy to get to this call.
Oh, okay.
Because your name's on the list, which mine apparently wasn't.
Okay. Who was just speaking? I'm sorry.
Nancy Ganahan.
You were the one talking about the difficulty getting on the call?
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, they want to know your life history. That's never happened to me before, but if that's the new system, that's fine, too.
Okay. Is there anyone on the call from Children's Hospital Boston?
Yes, Dr. Garreau and Nina Rauscher.
Okay. Thanks for joining us. Anyone on the call from STS? Jane, are you there?
I am here.
Oh, okay. Is there anyone else from your camp there?
We should have both Marshall and Jeff Jacobs joining us today.
Okay. And anyone from AHRQ yet? I think they were going to be joining a little bit later, maybe around 2 p.m. So we'll check when we get to that discussion. Okay, well, let's go ahead and move into the recap, and hopefully by the time we get to the discussion of some of the comments, we'll have a little bit more, a few more people that will trickle into the call. Essentially what was just completed was the comment period on the measures and draft report. The next step in the process is for once we get all the comments and have resolved some of the issues with the competing measures, moving forward, the measures will then go out for member voting. That will be a 30-day calendar day period as well for the members to go in and vote on the measures that they would like to see move forward. And then following that, the measures, the comments that were submitted via this process would go to the Consensus Standards Approval Committee, and they would essentially vote on the measures that should be moved forward for endorsement at that time as well. So we're anticipating that will happen at the November 3rd, 4th CSAC meeting, pending everything moving smoothly from here. So we'll keep you posted on that timeline and let you know how things move forward. In terms of today's call, the goal is to, I know I sent out several documents via a couple of emails, but wanted to just make sure you had everything. Within that 30-day comment period, we received approximately 40, plus or minus 40 comments. And what we've done is we put them all into a spreadsheet for you guys. We're going to be looking at that spreadsheet today during the call. The goal of today's call is to have the steering committee as well as some of the measure developers on the call to address some of the comments. If you had a chance to read through the comments already, you'll notice that some of them seem to be kind of pointed at the developer, and they have questions about, you know, the specifications or why a measure was done in a certain way. So we will give the developer an opportunity to respond to that, as well as to give the committee an opportunity to, you know, hear the response and comment on the measure or the comment itself. And then ultimately, we'd like to, you know, dive back into this issue with the competing measures. We've kind of been putting it off. We wanted to get some comments in from the public to see where some of the public and the members stood on the issue. And so we've got a few of those comments in, and so now it's going to be up to the steering committee to make a decision or determination on how we should move forward with those measures. And the second email that I sent you on Thursday of last week, I kind of outlined, you know, how the process would go. Once we get into that competing measures issue, we'd like to hear from the committee, you know, what you would recommend in terms of best in class among the two categories of measures. That's for the mortality measures as well as the volume measures. What you would recommend, your rationale for that recommendation, or if you feel that NQF should have more than one endorsed measure in that category, we'd like to hear why you would like to do that as well. So we just need to get some more information and have an idea from the committee on where, you know, we should move forward on that issue. So that's the goal. I'm going to be running the spreadsheet from here. Hopefully everyone can see the webinar. And if possible, when Lisa and Howard are presenting, the co-chairs, they can just call out the row number of the comment we're on for those of you that may be looking at the spreadsheet on your computer and don't have access to the webinar. So we'll move forward from there. Does anyone have any questions so far about process, the goals of the call, or anything like that?
This is Daryl Green from AHRQ. Sorry, I just joined. I mentioned the FDA meeting on pediatric patient safety.
Oh, okay. Thanks for letting us know you're here.
Yeah. I won't be able to see the webinar, but I do have the paper versions.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what we discussed. I'm not sure whether or not I need to formally recuse myself from discussions about the measures, or I can, you know, potentially just make comments not representing AHRQ, since obviously that would, in some sense, potentially represent a conflict of interest.
Right. No, Daryl, you're fine on that front. I did speak with John Bott, and they're going to have someone on the call closer to 2 o'clock, so you're
sure.
Fine.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Hello, this is, I don't know if you guys can hear us. This is Jeff Jacobs
from
Marshall
Jacobs.
I just wanted to let you guys know we're on the call. We originally dialed into a line that we were allowed to listen but not speak. But subsequently, we were transferred to a line where we now have the power of voice. So,
okay.
I'm glad you guys can hear us, and we're both happy to be here.
Thank you. Anyone else from the steering committee that's popped in since we started the call?
John Meyer.
Okay, great. Welcome. Alan Hinkle, Shanae, or Lisa, or Patty? Okay, we'll go ahead and move forward. So, Lisa and Howard, if you're ready, we can go ahead and start with PCS 00109.
Okay, this is line 19, submitted by NACRI. Their comment with regards to participation in National Database for Pediatric and Congenital Heart Surgery focused on once there are other databases that are considered, is there a degree of variation in participating in these registries? I know that from previous conversations we had agreed as a steering committee that centers were allowed to participate in other databases as long as we were collecting the data. That was the whole premise of this. I'd like to open it up to the steering committee members for further comment.
I'm sorry, when you said you're on line 19, I printed out the paper version, so I'm not sure what is this the line number based on the Excel spreadsheet or
it is. So,
yeah.
Carol,
yeah.
It's the line that is for you. It's the line that begins. It's by Ellen Schwanstocker,
yeah,
from NACRI.
But is it the first column? The first comment from her?
Yeah, it's about measure one.
Yeah.
Right. Let me see the way this is.
She only has one comment for measure one.
Okay. I'm sorry. Let me see if I can find. Okay. I guess you probably don't know which. Okay. I'll just look. Yeah. Okay. I see what it is.
Do you see it?
This is the discussion of the variability of this measure is based on. Yeah. Okay.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there any comments from the steering committee?
Well, I think we, this is John Meyer. I think we all anticipated that at some point, most, if not all, the participants, at least I made the assumption that most, if not all, of the participants would ultimately wind up in the SPS database. I think the current data are something on the order of 75% or more of the pediatric cardiac centers are now participating in the SPS database, and certainly all the large volume ones. So, I think it was, if I recall the discussions that we had, I don't think it was anyone's presumption that everyone had to only belong to the SPS database, because there were other efforts that were ongoing. Certainly there's a Pediatric Cardiac Care Consortium has been around for a number of years and has functioned in a similar sort of fashion to the SDS database. You know, the SDS proponents would argue that.
I think, Dr. Meyer, this is coming from Ellen representing NACRI, and she might be seeing it from the VPS perspective, which is an ICU database that now has a cardiac module, which actually has RACS and STS nomenclature integrated in it.
Which database is that?
It's the VPS. It's a ICE.
Yeah.
It's a,
okay. Yeah, the virtual PICU. Right.
Right. I think that's where her perspective might be, is that we have this robust ICU database, which has the surgical data codes within it.
It does not have the same data that's in the SDS database in terms of the clinical data. And I don't think that I'm pretty sure I have this right, but Howard, maybe you could help. But I'm pretty sure it's not the same data set.
It's not the same data set.
Not the same data set.
I think the...
And it's not collecting the same information?
No. I think the intent of this question is just that while in the current environment the STS has 75%, we don't know what's going to happen in 10 years. And so we don't want a measure that's going to box us into something that may evolve over time.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, and I think the measure is well worded to reflect that. So, I think sort of the question, her question is addressed because the measure doesn't specify STS. It specifies the components which currently are in the STS data set. So I think the measure has enough flexibility as it's currently worded.
Any other comment? Is there any other comment from anyone? Okay. Can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah,
so I'm going to move on to the next.
All right. This is Sylvia in Oklahoma. I was just having problems listening to Dr. Meyer. I could barely hear him.
Okay. Is that any better?
Yes.
Thanks. Sorry.
Uh-huh.
All right. I'm going to move on to the next comment from the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners. Their comment relates to
Which line, please?
I'm sorry. The line is 31. And their comment relates to should there be congenital heart programs that are still functioning if their outcomes are subpar in relation to other centers. And we had talked about this earlier on the phone call that this measure isn't really the premise of developing this measure is to set to benchmark for outcomes and not to decide when institutions should continue doing cardiac surgery. That's for policy makers and other stakeholders to decide. I will open this up for comment to the steering committee.
I mean, it certainly makes sense. I mean, I'm wondering why. I mean, that the measure certainly didn't seem to me to. Hysterically, obviously, but the measure certainly didn't seem to imply anything like that. So I'm wondering where that would even come from. I mean, obviously, it would be a concern. We certainly don't want people thinking that the point of especially of this measure is to in any way serve as a policeman or something in terms of centers doing procedures.
I would agree. I think the big danger in all of this is that we get into a tournament approach.
Get into what?
What's what I would term a tournament approach, where
uh-huh.
there are obligate winners and losers.
Right.
And what we really ought to have is a target approach, which is once everybody gets above a certain bar, then, you know, that's all you need to worry about, and then we can look at new measures that will overall lead to an improvement in quality. But the tournament approach, you know, where they're obligate lose winner, you know, some people have talked about this. Well, you know, we should be cutting off the bottom 5% every time we do the measures. Well, you know, there's after a while, you know, there'll only be one man standing or one program standing. So that's sort of silly. I agree with you, Daryl. I think this is, you know, a left field comment that I don't understand.
Well, I hope that it's a left field comment. I don't know if it just argues for just strengthening and clarifying the assertion that's not at all what this is about. So that at least it mitigates concerns that this might be, unless people think that this is just such an anomalous comment that we don't need to. Think that other people have this concern.
I don't think, certainly, as far as I know, that's not what anyone's intent is.
No, certainly not intent. I mean, I just don't know if people think that it's worth even dignifying with a clarification that's not what we're doing.
I don't see any reason not to respond. I mean, it just, you know, and all on the lines that you've outlined,
yeah.
What this is about.
Any other comments? Okay, we'll move on to line 46 from Baylor Children's Hospital. This comment actually just relates to the contents or the data that's being collected in the national database.
Is there a way either on the basis of what page this is, what page of comments this is, since I mean, I don't know, maybe I may be the only one that doesn't have line numbers, but I can't otherwise tell.
I don't have a page. I don't know if
Yeah, sure.
Ashley, do you have a page?
Daryl, the measure, it's submitted by David Wiener.
Okay, let's see.
About measure one.
Yeah, all it's right. Hard for me from this end because my spreadsheet is filtered, so it's...
Oh, yeah, okay, all right.
Did you find it?
I assume I'm sorry, you said this is on measure two?
One. It's from Texas Children's.
Yeah. It's okay. I see it. It's basically after his comment on measure five.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So the comment was basically that anesthesia components should be included in the database. And into the national coliform consensus standard on. Making sure that data is captured. I'll open it up to the steering committee, and also to the developers. I know that there is data that is collected, and I think it's recognized by the person who made this comment that there is data that's collected by the STS database. But I think there, if any other registries are being developed, they're making the statement that anesthesia data should also be collected. So first I'll open it up to the steering committee members.
I think, I don't know if there are any data to quantify just how many programs, this is Gus Maravutis, how many programs are collecting the anesthesia component of congenital heart surgery. If there are only a handful, then that may be problematic in terms of how this is going to be collected in the future. On the other hand, if the groundwork is being laid to say, okay, we want this to be part of the data gathering program, then it would be up to each of the 120 odd programs in the country to decide that they should get that data. I think so far it hasn't been accepted widely, but maybe that's going to happen. I'd love to hear what other people say about it.
This is Jeff Jake. Do you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Am I allowed to talk about this now? I know you said developers or steering committee. Is that okay? I speak now?
Yeah.
That's fine.
So the anesthesia database, David Wiener is the director of the Congenital Cardiac Anesthesia Society database, which is a component of the STS Congenital Heart Surgery Database. It's an optional module. It just began collecting data on January 1st, 2010, so it's been collecting data for 9 months and 13 days. And the first harvest of that data by DCRI is actually happening this week. So I think that it's completely relevant and important to include anesthesia data in any database that assesses the outcomes of cardiac surgery on children and adults with congenital heart disease. I think that to expand that to being able to write quality improvement indicators from that data, we're still a bit away from that because we're just starting to capture the data. So we wouldn't be able to provide any data to support any further metrics other than just capturing it. I hope that helps. Oh, and as far as how many people are participating, right now it's somewhere between 5 and 10 sites are participating. But that shouldn't be surprising because in 2002, the STS Congenital Heart Surgery Database, when it started electronic data collection, had 16 sites and now has 90. So although there's between 5 and 10, I think that number will increase over the course of time.
It strikes me that maybe where this letter is coming from is just, you know, they want to be sure that they're not left out. You know, that the anesthesia module isn't left out. But I'm not sure what we can actually do about that.
I think the response
point out that the STS database has created a separate cardiac anesthesia module at the request of the Pediatric Cardiac Anesthesia Society. That you know the that this capability exists, and I suppose in some way would be interpreted as improving the importance of the STS database. But
another way of doing it, John, this is Gus. Another way of doing it is that since this was this conference and this exercise, the global exercise, was mostly for congenital heart surgery, then perhaps it would be incumbent on the protagonist for the anesthesia module to open up another inquiry and then do that as themselves. Right now, we are being asked to be surrogates for them. I don't mind doing that. I don't mind voting on it. On the other hand, wouldn't they be better off being the proponents of bringing this forward? I think we're trying to add something to this exercise that maybe is expanding things outside of our realm of expertise. I don't know. What do you what do others think about that, John? What do you think about that?
Well, I agree. I mean, I think I know where this is coming from. I mean, I'm not sure exactly whether this is in our purview or not, other than, as I said before, it sort of does.
John, it's pretty hard to hear you.
I'm sorry. What it does is it does, add a little more oomph or whatever to the SDS database as the congenital database of that probably will become the common standard. But I don't know that that's in our purview to even comment on, to be honest with you.
Or, Darrell, do you think that I don't know if we need to clarify some set of criteria that any given database that's being considered on its own actually meet in order to be considered meeting the standard of this particular measure, so that then whether or not this module on its own would be considered to be sufficiently robust in terms of being able to capture some aspects of the quality of pediatric surgical care, such that as long as it met that, then it almost doesn't matter whether it's where it's actually originating, as long as it meets those standards, and this or the VPS database or anything else would still meet the standard.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, Darrell. I think if the intent is that the SDS database is able to align with databases within anesthesia, within ICU, within echo, within cath, then I think it sort of meets the goals here.
Uh-huh.
I think to state that a cardiac surgical national registry needs to have anesthesia is a bridge too far.
No, I wasn't suggesting that.
No, I know you're not. I know you're not, and I'm agreeing with you. I think that's a bridge too far. I think we want to state that the database is able to align with additional databases from other specialties which relate to cardiac surgery.
Well, do we even really need to say that? I mean, I would think that if the goal is just to identify centers that are participating in a database effort that would help improve the care of pediatric surgical patients. I mean, I don't know that it necessarily needs whether it's able to align with other efforts that might capture other aspects of the care. I mean, I think that would be nice. I myself wouldn't think that would be a requirement for somebody to meet the standard here, unless I don't know what other people think about that.
Yeah, I think all we've done is, I think we've laid out what the criteria are, right? That for this participation in a national database.
Right.
So I think it's up to each of those who claim to be a national database to meet the criteria.
Is there any other comments? Hello?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
Well, I mean, is that what you want us to do, say yes or no?
All right. We'll go ahead and move to the next one, although I can't see it on the webinar.
You guys should be seeing, I just filtered on measure two, so there should be two rows showing?
Yep.
Okay.
So we're now on line 39. This is... Darrell, for you, Jan Bull submitted this from the National Alliance for Quality Care.
I'm sorry, you said it was line 39?
Yes.
And the one we just did was line 41, so I guess it should be 2. Or, I'm not sure how it's counting the rows, but I'm sorry, this is Jan who?
Her,
Full,
C-U-L-L. Yeah, Full.
From where?
Sorry, my thank you.
Alliance for Quality Care.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, do you want to start there, or are we starting on the measure, the first one?
I'm sorry, that was my fault. I hadn't scrolled all the way up. Sorry.
Yeah, it keeps flipping on me. So, sorry, Daryl. We're now on row 18.
Okay. And who
so
is
from,
that?
From Ellen Schulenstocker from
yeah, right.
the from
sure,
NACRI.
Sure. Okay, sure.
Okay. And it's about, this is on measure 0209, which is a multidisciplinary conference to plan
okay.
pediatric and congenital heart surgery cases.
Right.
I'm not sure that she really posed a question.
What?
Looks like she basically just agreed.
Well, no, there's something in here, right?
I see. In the measure on each case might for.
Is it something about the evaluation summary with regard to the need for more precise specifications of what constitutes a meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right. But she wants it to be more well-defined about what constitutes a multidisciplinary conference. If there are specific components of the meeting that should be established. And I know that we talked about this at length about whether this should be well-defined and who should, participants should be included in this conference. And I thought that we had tried to leave that up to the institutions, although leaving the goal of the conference be the same. So I'll open that up to steering committee members for comment.
Well, I think some of, you know, each of us, most of us have only worked really in one or two institutions, and we each have our own notion about this. You know, and it may not be exactly, you know, we may not be able to cookie cutter this, right? And we may not be able to say that, you know, in institution X, they don't qualify because they didn't have the dietitians there, or that in institution Y, they didn't have the, you know, cath lab technicians, or, you know, I mean, I think there's a danger in trying to make this too specific, other than to say that it seems like at least all of the physician staff who are going to be involved in the patient's care are present. So that, you know, in our institution, you know, we have cardiologists, cardiac surgeons, anesthesiologists, and intensive care unit people who are actually in our place are all in the cardiology department. So those are our major components. We have other people who come. You know, our perfusionists come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of our nurse practitioners come, others. But, you know, that may or may not work in other places. And I'm not sure that it's as essential as, you know, the physicians who are likely to be involved in the patient's care. That's what I would propose as a way of making it more specific. Maybe others have other ideas.
I would think that this might be another one of those measures where because of the things that you mentioned, that there is likely to be some variability, and if we don't want to be prescriptive in terms of saying what disciplines have to be represented, that it is left sort of open-ended, and that people realize that it's, you know, it's not as specific a measure as, you know, whether or not, you know, it's like the antibiotic measure or something like that, but just that it is more general, and it's a lot harder to, you know, in a sense it might be harder to know exactly what to make of somebody being able to check yes, but that just may have to do with the inherent variability of, you know, practice in different institutions.
Any other comments? Okay. We'll move on to the next that's been proposed.
I can't see who it was. You can move the, there you go. So the Nursing Alliance for Quality Care is on the same measure, and they are recommending that the definition who's included in this conference be expanded to include the same team members as identified for the subsequent measure. And so they're listing out the participants that should be involved, which we just, I think it's basically rediscussing what we just talked about. One of the things that has been brought up is family as well in this conference, and that may be due to a lack of misunderstanding about how these conferences are run and the potential for exposure to other patients' information. But I will bring that up if there's any other further comment.
I agree with you, and I think it's also unrealistic
really?
To include primary caregivers and pharmacists and respiratory therapists. You know, we might as well just stop the whole institution from operating while we have this conference. I mean, you know, this is not realistic. In addition to what I think is a very important little privacy problem, you're going to ask all the families to come in and listen while we discuss their patients' cases? I don't think so.
Right.
Any other comment? All right, we'll move on to the next, which was from the public. Daryl, it's line 43. And again, this refers to anesthesia, stating that a representative from anesthesia should be present at the conference.
I think it actually already says it.
I believe we do. I thought we did too. I don't think.
I mean, I just reviewed the measure actually says, in, not limited to cardiology, cardiac surgery, anesthesia, and critical care. So.
Okay.
I think it's addressed.
All right. We'll move ahead once. There we go. Can we move ahead to the next one? The next measure is on line 16. I mean, next comment is on line 16 from the National Association, or from NACRI. And this is 00309, multidisciplinary rounds involving multiple members of the healthcare team. Again, there's a request for more precise specifications on how rounds are delineated and what specific components should be involved.
We were this is Gus. We were intentionally vague about this. We were intentionally vague to say that multidisciplinary rounds should be conducted, but we were very careful not to say exactly who representing who should be there.
Right. This is exactly what John just spoke to in the previous measure.
Okay. Well. So I don't know what to do about that except to say that what we have, it was considered and was not thought of in a light moment.
Thank you. Is there any other comments?
I think the bottom comment, have you gotten there yet, about a process measure? You know, I think that becomes, I think that becomes pretty challenging to do.
Yes.
With that, you would be auditing sort of daily or weekly or monthly, whatever appropriate time, but that actually this occurs. I think that just becomes pretty arduous for an institution. I think leaving it as a structure measure makes more sense.
I mean, they do state at the end that they recognize that this would be difficult to collect, so in a perfect world, obviously, that would be wonderful if everyone did everything. Any other comments before we move on? Okay, the next comment is on line 38. I'm sorry, I can't see who put this forth.
Nursing Alliance for Quality Care on my
screen. Okay, there you go. Okay. I couldn't see it scrolling back. So they have a question about, it's not clear why the denominator is limited to cardiology, cardiac surgery, and critical care. They're asking about family being included in multidisciplinary rounds. I know that we addressed this, and when we said it's not limited to, we included family. when we talked about this.
Yep.
Not sure why this is.
I think this is going. Their comment is going beyond cardiac surgery.
But the metric says involvement of the family is encouraged. That text is right in the metric.
Yes.
No, but their comment is they're not sure why it's limited to cardiology.
They're talking about the measure, though. The measure's not limited to.
It says we recommend the numeric standards include all pediatric patients and potentially all inpatients.
Totally beyond the scope of what
we
have.
Yeah.
Right.
They also talk about future research, about operational. Okay. Any other comments?
Thanks.
Ashley, if you could advance this, thank you. Okay. The next one is on line 17. It's put forth by NACRI. This is measure 00409, regularly quality assurance and quality improvement cardiac care conference. The comment is the need for more precise specification of what the necessary components of this conference includes. And again, I think we've talked about how this is difficult for institutions to streamline this based on what their resources are. I will open this up for comments from the steering committee.
Didn't we, I thought again in the measure as proposed that, you know, we talked about complications and other, you know, adverse event analysis sort of things that, I mean, I thought that was pretty much already in there. And so I'm not sure what more precise specification they're interested in. Or do I misremember what's in the measure?
Jeff, can you comment on that?
I couldn't hear what John had said. Could you repeat what he said?
No, I just said I thought we had specified a fair amount of what was in the, you know, what, I mean, this is an M&M conference, right?
Yeah, right. So the text of the metric says the title is Regularly Scheduled Quality Assurance and Quality Improvement Cardiac Care Conference. Description is occurrence of a regularly scheduled quality assurance and quality improvement cardiac care conference to discuss care provided to patients who undergo pediatric and congenital cardiac surgery operations and to discuss opportunities for improvement. This conference should be held at least every 3 months, parenthesis quarterly.
Okay, all right. So it's maybe not as specific as I had recalled, so that's my fault.
I think it's specific enough, though.
Yeah, I think the issue is, I mean, at least what my thoughts were was that, you know, this was basically, you know, an M&M or an M&M-like conference at which adverse outcomes were reviewed and analyzed and opportunities for improvement were discussed. I don't know if we want to make it that specific, but that's sort of what was in my head, or whatever that's worth.
I believe that there was some discussion about, yes, it being M&M, but also if smaller centers combine the M&M with just quality assurance issues within the department, we kind of left it a little bit vague in terms of instead of being very specific about that was the intent, major intent.
I think that's fine. Do we need to provide that, you know, more? Maybe we just need to provide some more specific response along the lines that we've just talked about. Adverse outcomes reviewed may also include
you know, other quality improvement activities.
John, this is Marshall speaking. Looking at the wording, discuss care provided to patients who undergo pediatric and congenital cardiac surgery operations and to discuss opportunities for improvement. I think that implicit in discussing opportunities for improvement is acknowledging outcomes that were different from optimal or ideal.
I don't disagree, Marshall, but somebody else wasn't on the same page as us or was coming from the same place we were. So I was just trying to respond to the comment. I totally agree. You're absolutely right.
Is there any other comment? I got the same impression that John did, that they were a little confused as to what this actually was referring to. So if we could provide a little bit more clarity, that might be that might clear up the issue. Any other comments before we move on?
Just from one of Mr. Stewart's, I think that we would defer and can you hear me?
Yes.
We would defer entirely to the NQF and the steering committee. If you think the clarity of one of these measures could be enhanced by changing or adding words, particularly in a circumstance, as John Meyer described, where they don't change the meaning or the intent, but perhaps make it easier for a reader or stakeholder to understand, we are completely in support of making these the best, most useful, most easily understood measures possible. So it's in your hands to refine them. If that's part of the NQF process, we would be delighted.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. We'll move on to the next comment/measure. Ashley?
Yep, just give me one second.
Sure, thank you.
Trying to capture a little bit of what was said. Okay.
Okay, we'll go to line 15, and this is from Ellen. Squallenstocker from NAFRI.
Yeah.
This is referring to measure 00509, the availability of intraoperative TEE. Their comment is the usefulness of this measure is unclear. As approximately 98% of the centers use TEE, although some centers employ it selectively. It would be more helpful to measure the use of TEE on a per-case basis to better understand the relationship between this structure and outcome.
We obviously discussed this the last time in terms of how many cases that needed to be put in. Should you use TEE for AV canal? Sure. Should you use it for ASD? Maybe not. And we left it intentionally that just the presence of it to be enough for an outcome measurement, because if we got into the idea of which cases should be used and which cases shouldn't be used, it would just become an impossible measuring method. So I think that maybe an explanation for that should suffice, but I don't see changing anything for what we originally contended with.
Any other comments?
Oh, I agree.
The next comment is on line 45, and their comment is it would be useful to mention in the consensus standards for TE that epicardial echocardiography should be readily available for patients in whom TEE is contraindicated.
I agree.
Any other comments?
Any comments from the measure developers?
Marshall and Jeff Jacobs here would both agree with that, and adding a sentence at the end of the metric that says exactly that, epicardial electrocardiography should be available if transesophageal electrocardiography is contraindicated. I think we would be supportive of adding that sentence to the end of the metric.
Right.
Okay.
Wait, so, but so you're saying that when you're saying it should be available, just the idea that, I mean, obviously everybody's going to have a program to do that, so I don't know. Because, I mean, it seems that, you know, the idea of the measure, you know, as we discussed, was it wasn't, we weren't, you know, specifically weren't defining what a program of TE actually means in terms of the availability.
Forgive me for interrupting you. I think that all of these measures are aimed at developing ensuring that a program which has these things available would by necessity use them.
Say again.
What I'm saying is that it's not so much important as to what they do with this, so much as it is that it's available, and you would assume that the program would use it when it's necessary.
Right.
And if you use it when it's necessary, it cannot do anything but help the condition of the program. That is to say that the patient, you couldn't use a TEE because the patient had esophageal atresia, and you used it in another way epicardially, so you got the information by virtue of the fact that you had an alternative way of doing it. I don't think it speaks to the idea whether you can get whether it by itself is important, but the fact that if you use it and you have the ability to use it, it gives you the idea that, or it gives the metric an idea that this is a all-encompassing, shall we say, or all-ready-to-go kind of program. It's an indicator that it's a good program, just like what we're doing here. All these are indicators.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
sure.
I think maybe, just to state it another way, Gus, I think, you know, any program or any place purporting to be a program that didn't have this ability to do intraoperative echocardiography would be pretty suspect in our, you know, in our world these days. And, I think, you know, the comment here is probably that, if I read between the lines, that, you know, we're not setting the bar.
Yes, sure, sure, sure.
But that, you know, this is a minimum requirement, almost. Or it is a minimum requirement. And anybody who doesn't
mean
have
you mean this mean if the availability of TE, presumably everybody's going to have epicardial.
Well, you know, but, you know, having it set up so you can do it in a sleeve and have the ability to get good pictures and, you know, I mean, it's not just like putting a transducer on the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it intraoperatively is a different ballgame than trying to do a typical transthoracic echo. All of this, of course, says nothing about the ability or the whatever of the people who are actually interpreting the echo.
Oh, that's true.
Any other comments? Okay, we'll move on. Okay. The next comment is on line 12. This was submitted by NACRI, and this is in regards to measure 1009, timing of antibiotic administration for pediatric congenital cardiac surgery patients. The comment that they're agreeing with the comment in the evaluation summary that knowing the number of patients excluded from this from some measure because of inadequate documentation of things like incision and or antibiotic start times would itself be important and should not be excluded.
I don't understand what they mean by excluded.
Yeah, I mean, as the person that put that comment in the first place, what I meant was, I mean, you would end up excluding them from the actual measure since you can't address that, but just that I would just clarify that what I meant was that you would, uh, for for numbers of patients in this case that are not, for whom you can't actually address whether they actually satisfy the criteria for the measure, you'd say, well, we had 427 cases that we could measure, and that number, 83% actually did have any appropriate timing, and then in addition to the ones that are in the denominator, all the actual measure that 43 were excluded because they did not have sufficient information on the timing of the incision or the timing of the antibiotic development. So they would actually be excluded, but from the actual percentage. But that you would note that they were excluded on the basis of inadequate documentation, and that is in a sense a separate indirect measure of quality, in that they didn't actually have enough information to be able to apply the measure.
So, but wouldn't that be a way of sort of gaming the system? And that, if you say that the medical records are inadequate, but the patient should have received antibiotics because they had a cardiac surgery.
Well, they may have actually gotten the antibiotics. You mean not saying that they didn't get it?
Well, but that's their institution's problem for not documenting it appropriately.
Okay, but I mean, you could, if you had these separate, I mean, actually, I sort of have some of their experience with this sort of thing through the AMA's Performance Management Advisory Group, that actually when you have an exclusion like that, then you have to say, well, we got, that we had 27 patients that did not have adequate documentation, then NQF or anybody else could then say, well, okay, thank you for that information. We are then going to turn around and explicitly add them to the denominator and obviously not to the numerator, so that your performance will go down by that. But this way, at least if you specifically document that that's why they're there, that you can decide exactly how you want to handle those.
This is Dr. Marshall Jacobs, one of the measure stewards.
Yeah.
I want to say that all of these questions raised about antibiotics administered in the instance of canceled surgery, about redosing, those are all important clinical questions. As a reminder, the measures which have to be based on validated evidence, the measure is limited to those recommendations for which adequate evidence exists. And in pediatric cardiac surgery, the evidence that's available is really limited to choice of antibiotics and timing of antibiotics. And all those other things, when to redose and everything, are based on expert opinion on which there's really neither very strong consensus nor very strong evidence at this time. So while we concur with the importance of all those things, the measure is intentionally limited to the things that are supported by evidence.
Okay. That certainly makes sense. I think that's a separate issue from the one that's being raised in this particular comment. I agree that certainly those other things are not, that we can say in the comment regarding those things specifically, that, the fact that the evidence is not sufficiently robust to support making a performance, to make be making an actual measure out of that, is the reason that there was that those things are not being tracked as well.
Yeah, I think the question that Ellen raised is what to do with missing data.
Right.
So do you include those patients in the numerator, or do you exclude them from the measure?
In the numerator.
What's that?
I said you can't include them in the numerator because you.
Or excuse me, in the denominator.
And my point is just that if you list them separately, you're saying that we're able to measure adherence to the criteria for this measure in 427 patients, and then in addition, there were 37 patients for whom there was inadequate information to determine compliance. I mean, if you list it separately, then
I guess I'm fine with that, Daryl. Again, that's not what's stated here. That would need to be in addition.
But this is
just excluded.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that the point I was trying to make about exclusions is that the reason I was sort of be pedantic about saying that exclusions are not things like patients that don't have cardiac surgery, because they're just not included in the first place, but that exclusions, strictly speaking, people that actually met, that should have met the criteria for being in the measure in the first place, but were not for some reason. If you track those specific numbers separately, then you can actually address the issue of, well, they weren't there because there was inadequate documentation. You know, they should have been there, but there was inadequate documentation. So you can actually measure that. You can actually measure and calculate that separately. You can say.
I think we all understand that.
Okay.
I think the question is whether, you know, does. I mean, again, this sort of sounds like, to me, somebody who's, you know, interested in, you know, the research aspect of this, because they want to know the number of patients excluded. And I think that's probably useful, but it's not really what the measure is about. The measure
okay.
is about, you know, what percentage of the patients got the antibiotic on time, you know, at the appropriate interval prior to the, you know, dropping the knife on the skin.
Okay.
And, so this is a little tangential to that. I don't disagree that it would be useful to know, you know, whether institution X, you know, doesn't have adequate documentation in half the cases to determine whether or not the measure was met. I mean, I agree that that's, you know, but that's a different measure. That's something different. So I don't...
Do you really think that's something different? I think if you're not documenting it, you should get dinged for it.
I don't disagree with that, but I don't think that's exactly what was proposed.
I mean, if it's not documented, then it didn't occur.
Assume it, right. Exactly.
I mean, I don't have any problem, I mean, with it. I just think it's just slightly tangential, that's all.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, John, when I look at the other ones here. Like, I wouldn't want to list how many patients had infections before they had surgery. I agree, that's sort of excessive. When I look at, there's about five exclusions, but I still struggle with the one that Ellen brought up about medical records. So I'm not sure what we do with it, but...
Well, maybe we should, I don't know, I would propose that maybe we suggest the data is reported both ways.
Right.
That'd be fine.
With two different denominators.
Yeah.
Or even just in addition where you do, or an additional... data point where you just say how many of them were excluded, and I guess we can decide whether or not you actually want to have five lists of people excluded for different reasons, or if you just want to focus on reasons that themselves do represent an issue of potentially suboptimal quality of care because of the fact that they're not documenting the time. So
yeah,
maybe that's the only one that of the exclusion criteria that we actually want to list. I'm just saying, if you have it, if you have that list that separately, then we can decide after the fact what we want to do with it. Whereas if you just put them in the denominator, then you can't actually tell how many of them are. You can't tell if a center has performance on this that seems to be below everybody else. You can't tell if it's because.
Yeah. The one other problem that is implicit here that we haven't talked about, but I think everybody ought to understand, is what you do with the patient who is already on antibiotics for something else before they come to the operating room.
Those are excluded.
Okay.
In that, those were sort of the other four. Sorry, we don't have that list up, but those were excluded, John.
Okay, fine.
I guess I'm not understanding why you don't just include those centers who don't document that the patient didn't get antibiotics, because they're going to get dinged, and if they do a quality assurance evaluation, they're going to find out either A, they didn't document, or B, the patient didn't get the antibiotic and they need to get their act together.
I'm just saying that just having it separately allows you to, if you want to, you can just put them into the denominator later, but at least this way you know.
Patients undergoing pediatric and general cardiac surgery for whom there's documented of receipt of prophylactic antibiotics.
Marshall, can you say that again? We missed a bit of that.
Right.
Percentage of patients undergoing pediatric and congenital cardiac surgery for whom there is documentation receipt of prophylactic antibiotics or of administration of prophylactic antibiotics within 1 hour of surgical incision, so that that to report compliance with the measure, you are reporting documentation of administration of the antibiotic. I think that that makes sense, and I think it also satisfies the issues of this query.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Okay, so we change the wording to that, so therefore they actually end up...
documentation of having received.
Right. Okay.
Any further comment? Okay. We sort of skirted around the other subsequent comments, but the next comment is on line 25. I'm sorry, I can't see who provided it. And it talks about recommendations about the length of use of antibiotics, as well as identified for specific infection, time of prophylaxis, which I think that we talked about this issue, and basically the measure is really looking at timing in relation to surgery and the timing and administration. So we weren't talking about how long they were going to get the antibiotic. This measure wasn't focusing on that. Any other comment? Okay, we'll go on to the next one, which is on line 44. And again, they're talking about consensus about redosing antibiotics in procedures lasting longer than 4 to 6 hours. Again, we aren't addressing this. We're talking about just the bottom line is timing and administration of antibiotics, not whether you need to give a second dose if the patient's procedure is longer than 4 to 6 hours.
The administration of the initial antibiotic.
Yes, yes.
Wait,
any other comments? Okay. I'm not sure what this line is because I can't see because this is a late comment. Yep.
That's line 78.
Okay, and I see it now. 78 from the Physician Consortium for Performance Improvement. They're concerned about the measure lacks sufficient specificity with respect to instances when surgery is delayed. Given that the measure counts redosed patients, again, this talks about redose, delayed surgery in the numerator, we believe clinicians could benefit from additional instruction regarding the timing of antibiotic in these instances when surgery is delayed. Again, we were, again, specifically talking about timing of antibiotics when the patient's in the operating room.
I think the issue here is there is a, in the measure numerator, there is a statement that in the event the surgery is delayed, as long as the patient is redosed, if clinically appropriate, the patient should be included in the numerator.
Oh, okay.
So I think this comment is basically saying what is appropriate redosing.
So do we have, I guess the question is there data on this and do, provide further clarification of this?
Time interval for appropriate redosing varies with the choice of antibiotic.
Correct.
And for some antibiotics, with the renal function of the patient. So
yeah.
While there is a general guideline for initial administration, redosing would be beyond the scope of the guideline because there are too many variables.
So do we think that maybe that should be another exclusion criterion? Is that if it's delayed because of the fact that as you're saying, it's too hard to essentially have an appropriate criteria there, or I guess that then potentially raises some minor spectral potential gaming, but I would think that it is too hard. Maybe that part ought to come out because it is so hard to be able to include those cases in there.
I mean, unless there's a comment that redosing is a, I mean, I think actually it does state it. So it says redosing if clinically appropriate. I mean, I think that some ways, as Marshall said, there's a lot of patient variability that's going to be dependent on redosing. And I think it's up to the institution to see if they've satisfied this measure. I mean, you can always game anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's up to them to decide if they have redosed appropriately based on patient's renal status, based upon the drug used.
Any further comment?
So do we think that, so Marshall and Jeff, do you guys think that leaving that in there is okay, or do you want to essentially take it out to just avoid that problem, or do you think it's okay leaving it in, because obviously then the response to the comment would be that we're leaving that up to the institution to determine what appropriate redosing would be based on the circumstances of the particular patient.
Daryl, I don't really understand your question.
No, I'm just saying, so you want to just leave that in terms of just say that in response to this, to the question that Ellen raised, that's just being left up to the institution because there's so much, as you mentioned, so much variability, and there's, you know, really no evidence basis for being very proscriptive in terms of what would be appropriate redosing in the case of a delay, you know, given the patient variability.
I think that this measure would be fine if it was left unchanged.
Okay.
Any further comment? Okay, thank you. We'll go on to the next one. The next comment is on line 11 from NACRI. It's regarding measure 011-09, selection of antibiotic administration. And they are, the comment is they're concerned about the exclusion of patients whom medical records do not include an antibiotic start / date or incision date / time for the measure denominator.
We already dealt with it.
Yeah, I think we already addressed this previously. I'm going to move ahead unless there's any comments. The next comment is line 33. Sorry, I can't see who it's from. It's from the Association for Professionals in Infection Control and Epidemiology. And it's the comment is basically the antibiotic selection criteria may not always be applied to the pediatric or the VIP antibiotic selection criteria may not always be applied to pediatric population, and this has been extrapolated from the adult population. In lieu of guideline support for the measure, published consensus opinion and supporting clinical data from the STS congenital heart surgery database will be used. And it's saying that expert consensus opinion lacks scientific rigor to demand uniformity in all situations where inclusion criteria are met. If a newer antibiotic were approved for surgical prophylaxis, the measure may not be nimble to change antibiotics on the approved drug list. So my take from this comment is that they're concerned about the drugs that were listed that may be too limited and may not be may not have scientific rigor. I'll ask the developers for comment.
Yes, I think that this question indicates exactly the reasons why the antibiotic measures were limited to those fundamental aspects that are supported by evidence. As far as the speculation that other antibiotics will come along through the evolution of first, second, and third generation cephalosporins, which are the most commonly used prophylactic antibiotics, the evidence still supports the time interval stated in the measure, and a separate time interval is stated for vancomycin. One would have to concede that if somebody created an antibiotic that needed to be given 6 hours before incision, that one would have to be acknowledged as a variant. But for all of the families of antibiotics that exist now and their newer iterations, these times are appropriate. And as I said, those indicators are limited to ones for which there's solid evidence.
Are there any further comments from the steering committee? Okay. The next comment is on line 79, and it's from the Physician Consortium for Performance Improvement. This relates to the same measure, and they are commenting on the concern that the measure relies on body weight appropriate dosage and are asking for an algorithm to help determine what how to calculate such dosage. Is basically what the comment is regarding. I myself am a little confused by this comment since I think most of us dose it per kilo, but and we also have made the comment earlier whether if there needs to be changes based on clinical condition that's warranted, we've left ourselves that out and not been too restrictive.
This is another one of those just how far specific are we going to go? Is it enough for us to know that that the antibiotics were given? And then the answer to that is, at this moment, yes. If we ever wanted to do a follow-up study, then we would say it's important to know what antibiotic was given, at what time, what was the dose, et cetera. It's almost like saying, did you wash your hands? Yes, that's good. Did you wash your hands, and then what kind of soap did you use? That's the way I look at it. And so I think that our initial thought was, look, this is a again, it's a metric. We want to know, did you give antibiotics? And we assume that you use some kind of brain power to arrive at whatever that antibiotic is, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it should be left the way it is.
Thank you. This is Marshall Jacobs responding. I think that the spirit in which this measure was written is the following. For the most common cephalosporin antibiotics, for adults going into cardiac surgery, one could give a gram. The gram small, medium, large, and extra large adults. Generalizations of that type are neither safe nor appropriate for infants and children. The appropriate means is to base the dose on body weight. And that's the spirit and the intent of the measure, not to provide an algorithm, but to make sure that people are dosed on body weight, not irregardless of the size of the patient.
Any further comment? Okay. We will move on. Howard, I think this is yours, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll be happy to take it. So this is regarding a this is a comment from Ellen Schwalenstocker from NACRI, and this is a measure 12, the use of an expanded pre-procedural and post-procedural timeout. The comment is that similar to their comments for measure 2, it's not clear why this is a structure measure and not utilized as a process measure. They do comment that a process measure would be useful, maybe more burdensome. It may be worthwhile to further describe the conventional pre-procedure timeout, including the use of a checklist. I have one question. Is this a structure measure or a process measure?
Seems like it's to me like it was structured because it, again
it's it's process.
I thought it was because we have a numerator and denominator.
Yeah, this is a process measure. That's post.
No, I'm sorry. This is Ashley from NQF. This measure was actually presented as a structural measure.
Yeah.
The only two process measures we had were the antibiotic measures.
So, but I guess if it were saying that it actually looks at the proportion of individual cases for which there is the timeout is documented, then that actually would make it a process measure. If the measure is only looking at the proportion of institutions that actually have an instituted policy regarding use of timeouts, then that would be structured.
Was this the way that we started with this measure? Because I remember having a discussion about all or none for this measure.
Yeah, right.
And if it's all or none, then it's not a, then it was more process than structure.
Yeah. No, our intent was for this to be a process measure. I'm not sure where somewhere along the line it might have got it converted to a structure measure.
Okay, that was my recollection.
When I've talked about these measures, I've always said that we have three process measures, the two for antibiotics and the third one about the expanded timeout. So I think I'm not sure how it ended up as a structure measure, but I think it should be a process measure.
Ashley, do you have a comment about that?
It's hard for me. We're trying to bring up the measure on a different screen right now. We've got, without changing what you guys are seeing, and we're going to look at it. I've looked at these measures a lot, and I don't remember this one being a process measure, but we're going to double check right now.
That may have been a mistake made on our part as well when we submitted one of the forms, because there's so many forms. But I think our intent is for it to be processed.
Hi, this is Jane from STS. I'm looking at the measure right now, and it is listed as a process measure in the form.
Thanks, Jane.
You're welcome. We'll double check on our end as well.
So in that, Jeff, do you remember when we discussed this about the all or none thing? What the answer was?
To be honest, I don't. I remember the discussion, but I don't remember what we concluded on that.
Yeah, either.
But either way, I still think that, you know, when I think about this, this is something that's processed for taking care of a patient, just like dosing the antibiotics the right way. It's something that, you know, it's something that can be treated, tracked, just like dosing the antibiotics the right way, and I think it should be a process measure.
Yeah, and that's my recollection of how we discussed it. So, Ashley, what would you like us to do with this, then?
We're going to let us follow up on this end, and then we will do any follow-up with the developer that needs to be done.
So does it need to go back out for comments since it went out as a structure?
Process?
No. Let me check on Ashley. Are you there?
Is this measure 12 that you're talking
about?
Line 12, yeah.
Measure 12, yeah.
Right. The way it was described is that there was no denominator, that it was whether or not the facility implemented an expanded pre-procedural and post-procedural timeout for all patients. Even though it says for all patients, it wasn't indicated that the way it was going to be measured is looking at every single patient, right? It's just that the facility says that they do it versus they're looking at individual patient records?
Well, that's what we're seeing there, but that wasn't how we recall the discussion about the measure a year ago.
Okay, these were the latest specifications that I think we received. So we'll have to clarify with STS.
Yeah, this is Jeff Jacobs from STS, and I do know that our intent is for this to be a process measure.
So you're suggesting that for the data collection that every single patient's record is looked at and determined whether there was an indication for a timeout and then whether it happened?
No, there's always an indication for a timeout, I'm suggesting that it's something that can be tracked just like whether or not antibiotics were given. It's a pretty easy thing to track with a checkbox on a data field. And that's why we had proposed this as one of our three process measures.
Okay, well, we would need to get specifications that would lend to it being a process measure, so we'll follow up with you.
Awesome.
Okay. So we will move on. What's next? So did we skip the surgical volume 7 and 8? Was that intentional?
There were no comments on them.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. All right. So number 18. Give me one second. I'm just getting...
I need a whole bunch of people.
All right. So for measure 18, we can start with
this thing right here.
Overhead to the page.
This is the first. So the first comment I have here is.
Thank you so much.
Is it from line 36? Is that what you have? American Nurse Association.
Yes, that's the top.
Yep.
Okay, and this is the measure about preoperative mortality stratified by five STS EACTS mortality levels. This is from the American Nurses Association, and the comments, they wish to express concerns regarding the misinterpretation of data from this measure, which is intended to measure operative mortality stratified by the levels, a multi-institutional validated complexity tool. And then there was a comment from NQF staff, can you clarify how the data might be misinterpreted? So I think we can move on from this measure. Ashley, you okay with that, with this comment?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. So the next comment is from the STS about this measure, and the comment is...
I'm sorry, Howard, one quick thing. I think the next few cells are basically what was pasted in there from the letter that was submitted, so that may provide a little bit of context.
Right. So do you want me to go through the comments?
Sure. However you think is best to it's dense, I realize, but...
Yeah, okay. So the comment basically states that STS recognized the limitation of using unadjusted mortality rates, and that for a decade, congenital, the STS database has stratified outcomes using RACS and Aristotle, and that their goal was to transition from a subjectively derived estimate to an empirically based tool, which was the development of the STS EACTS mortality levels that was done in 2009. And there's a listing of the number of procedures that were utilized and that it utilized a Bayesian model. The procedures were then sorted by mortality risk, and this sort of goes through the way that it was developed. And at the end, this mortality measure, the STS EACTS, had a C index of 0.773, which means demonstrated good discrimination, and it was that when looked across the other measures which are currently utilized, RACS and Aristotle, the C index was higher than the other two. That's all I have here. Is there more boxes?
Yeah, I think there's...
I can go to my other screen.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
This is Jeff Jacobs. What this is it's part of a multi-page letter.
Yeah.
There's a paragraph that's cut out of that multi-page letter and deposited in this cell, which unfortunately had a paragraph before it and a paragraph after it that put it in context. And that's why it sounds kind of dense and difficult to interpret here. But if it's put in context with the whole discussion on the multi-page letter from STS, I think it makes a lot more sense.
So do we have someone from STS who can represent that? Are we allowed to do that, Ashley?
Sure.
Do you represent the comment?
Sure.
Go ahead. Again, John, is that you?
Yeah, this is me.
Okay, go ahead.
Again, this is a piece of an overall discussion on why STS chose to move forward with the STS EACTS mortality categories for complexity stratification and to abandon the use of RACS and Aristotle. And that decision was made by an argument that has multiple subpoints. One point is that the STS EACTS score had a higher C index than either RACS or Aristotle when it was tested in a validation sample of tens of thousands of operations. A second point is that if we look at the number of operations that can be classified in the STS database, and the STS database now has over 150,000 operations, 99% of them can be classified by the STS EACTS categories, 96% by Aristotle, and 86% by RACS. And a third point is that the new system, the STS EACTS categories, are based on actual objective data from the databases that now have 250,000 operations in them, the STS and EACTS databases, rather than being structured based on expert opinion and subjective probability. Consequently, based on those 3 points, STS has recommended to use the STS EACTS scoring system and the STS EACTS categories as the methodology for complexity stratification when assessing outcomes.
Thank you, Jeff. So that, I think that those are the only comments on this measure. So let me open it up to the steering committee for response to the STS letter.
This is Gus Maravutis. The letter, if read entirely, makes a lot of sense and better sense than certainly that I can do. But it's a step-by-step analysis of the history of the database and how it is now structured based on empiric data. So it really speaks for me in terms of how this one ought to be structured. That was written by Sheehan and Fred Edwards. So it wasn't written by Jeff or Marshall. It was written by Sheehan and Fred Edwards. Obviously, both from the STS, but another viewpoint of how this moniker should be arranged. That's all from me.
Thanks, Gus. Any other comments?
I didn't call back.
Well, maybe everybody doesn't know who those people are, Gus. I mean, yeah.
Okay, then go ahead and tell them.
All right. Well, Dave Sheehan is the current overall chair of the database committee, and Fred Edwards is the next person up in the hierarchy. Both have been heavily involved in the database on the adult cardiac side, as well as the development of the previously developed NQF measures for adult cardiac surgery that were previously approved through the National Quality Forum. They both are heavily involved in the entire quality effort by the Society of Thoracic Surgeons. So these are people who have been intimately engaged in this whole area for at least a decade or more.
Howard, do you want to, in the interest of time, do you want to move on to 021 and then maybe just try to get through the discussion on the competing measures for the mortality?
Yeah.
Okay. And I think we also, is John Bott or someone else from AHRQ on the line? Got someone with
it. Yeah, this is, well, Jeff Geppert from the QI support team.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
thanks. I think we're going to get to discussion of your measure shortly. I just wanted to check in. Thanks.
Okay. So if we can look at measure 21. So the first comment that I see here is on line 20, and that's from the STS, and we sort of have reviewed that already. The next comment is by Dr. Mark Antman.
Excuse me, this is Children's Hospital. We'd like to see that measure up there, and we would like to have a discussion about it. Rather than just breezing through it, can we put it up on the screen?
But what would you like on the screen?
I'd like to see the measure on the screen.
You mean the comments?
Yes.
Okay.
They should be, actually. I just changed the screen. So you should be seeing maybe 5 or 6 comments now?
No, oh. I'm still seeing 018.
Yeah, that's what we're still seeing.
Oh, maybe there's a delay here. There might be a slight delay.
What's the line? What line number?
We're going to start with line number 23 when it comes up.
or line, yeah, line 23. I'm not sure why it's not showing up for you guys. It's showing up on my screen. Karen, do you have the webinar open? It's not showing up on mine either, actually.
Tom.
Still on 18. All right. Let me try to unshare and then reshare. Hold on 1 second.
There you go.
Can you see that now?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
So we'll start with line 23, excuse me. So this is a comment by the American Medical Association. And the comment states basically that while this measure addresses important areas of care, we cannot support its accountability measure at the clinician level to be used for public reporting. There are other factors beyond care directly provided by clinicians, including other healthcare professionals that could affect the care of those patients who would be impacted by this measure. We believe that performance measures are only appropriate at the clinician level when it's consistently shown that outcome is directly dependent on the clinician, not when other factors exogenous to the care of a clinical provider could impact it, such as in the case with mortality. Accordingly, this type of measure is best represented at higher levels of data collection. Reporting of this outcome at high levels of collection or aggregation does not take away from the value to individual clinicians and others who are part of the team. Okay.
We agree.
You agree with what? I'm sorry.
We agree that we would not have it at the clinician level for public reporting.
Okay. But
so we agree with the comment. We thank the group that submitted it.
So you are, okay, and that it should be at the institutional level, is that?
Correct.
Any comments from the steering committee?
See, what about at the? It was listed as also being potentially usable, I think, at the health plan level. I don't know how people feel about that.
Health plan?
I thought it said for 21.
I don't know if we're there yet.
I'm sorry, for this measure, that, you know, in the description of the levels at which it could be reported, as I recall, it included the health plan also as a potential level of reporting.
Not in this comment yet, but maybe we'll
No, not in the comment. I'm saying in measure in general. Just if we're talking about changing the levels at which the reporting goes on. I mean, I don't know if you want to.
Yes, I think that when we submitted the measure originally, we said at all levels, and now we are just saying at the institutional level.
Does he want to exclude the plan level also?
I believe the document you're looking at, there was a checkbox that said at all levels, and that would include the health plan, so we're only suggesting at the institutional level.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
So the next comment is line 35 from the American Nurses Association. It says the ANA also has concerns related to this measure, which calculates the ratio of observed to expected mortality. The Journal of Thoracic Cardiac Surgery suggests the system does not predict risk as well as a newer STS, EATTS, metal ANA concurs with the statements made by the steering committee regarding the shortcomings of this approach. Okay. Any comments on that comment?
I think that, this is Kim Govro. I think that that concern will be addressed in later comments if we're referring to the fact that it doesn't predict risk as well as the newer system. Or would you like me to address that now?
You can address it now.
Okay. While it is true that the paper published showing the STS EACTS categories does suggest that the area under the ROC curve is higher for their categories than for the RACS1 risk categories, we would like to point out that that's in the STS database, which is the database in which their categories were derived, and that our categories perform nearly as well and have been shown to perform well in other sources of data as well, which they haven't tested yet. Also, our measure is not just risk categories. There are other factors involved, and when, like age at surgery, when the additional factors are included, our C statistic is actually higher than the one for the STS EACTS risk categories.
Thank you. So if we go to the next, any other comments on that, on the Nurse Association comment? Okay, the next comment I have is...
Excuse me, we'd like to see what's going to be put down as the final comment written.
These aren't final comments, Nina. These are just proposed, and I wasn't able to capture it. We're going to have to re-listen to the call to transcribe it. So.
Okay, that's. I just wanted to be clear that we were going to capture it at a later time. Thank you so much.
No, staff will have to go back through this to make it a final.
Sure. We can also send you our scripted response as well.
Yes, we would greatly appreciate that.
That was great. Thank you.
There is the, I don't know, I'm talking locally here. Do we have the data that published about just what you said?
I'm sorry, John. You're going to have to speak up. We didn't hear you. You broke in and out.
Okay. Is the data published to you, you know, on the newer, you know, with more variables?
There's a lot of static on someone's phone.
Yeah.
It appears it's coming from Mr. Gary's line.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm actually on a pay phone, and there's no mute button here. I can hang up and call back in.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Can you repeat that, John?
No, I just asked if the data were out in print yet. That Kim was
I'm actually referring to data that's included in the Sean O'Brien paper that they reference, the STS references.
Okay.
Okay. The next comment is line 47. Is this different than what was in the one on 18? This is from the STS.
Yeah, so the letter was divided up into their comments about each of the measures, so we, you know, tried to place the text that referenced each of the measures for the, for their respective measures, so it shouldn't be exactly the same text now.
So the STS folks are on the line. Do you feel like these comments were already represented in the statement by Jeff Jacobs, or should we go through this further?
No, there's a whole variety of other comments that are listed in these boxes that, again, unfortunately, are taken out of context by putting them in Excel boxes instead of the original letter that they were placed into. However, I think that they do need to be read and they need to be discussed because there's a lot of information here.
Okay.
And Children's Hospital would like to respond to the discussion that occurred at when 018 was discussed.
Okay. Do you want to do that now, or would you like me to read these boxes first?
I guess we can go through the boxes, although I think some of them are just background information.
Okay.
No real comments to be addressed.
Okay. Okay, so the first box, which is line 47, agree, is background information describing where RACs came from. And that... case selection was from from ICD-9 codes, and that it was published in JTCVS in 2002. The next,
While we appreciate that the STS took the time to identify where RACs came from, I think Dr. Gavreau is going to make some comments.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that. So do you want me to? I guess I asked if you wanted to make a comment, and I didn't get a response.
Let's wait till we get to a specific question.
Okay.
Hey, Howard.
Yeah.
This is Jeff and Marshall. I think that it's going to be important to have a discussion of all of these comments, but if there's a transcribed record that's being created, which it sounds like it is, it's very important that all of the text from that original letter, which is in these different boxes, get read into that, into this transcribed record. Because other people who are not on this phone conference are going to be reading that transcribed record, and they need to have all the background that we put together to be able to understand the following discussion. So I think
Ashley, you provided the steering committee the entire letter, correct?
Yes, and all the text is actually, I mean, there was some, like, maybe a general sentence that introduced 021, but all the text is actually there. So
the steering committee received the entire letter, and so this also will be posted to the website in that way.
As for Children's Hospital, we received the full letter.
When this gets to other committees like CSAC, will they also be getting the full letter?
Yes, we'll give them the full letter.
Thank you.
Okay. So I think that probably reduces the need to read the letter in its entirety now. So if we go down to line 49, in that box it talks about advantages and disadvantages. I think we can just go through that. So in the STS comment, advantages, one, this is for the RACS system. Having been used in many published evaluations of outcomes, the RACS 1 system of procedure categorization is widely recognized. 2, the development of RACS is based on expert panel opinion. 3, when SMR is calculated using logistic regression based on coefficients that appropriately pertain to the correct reference data set, and if all centers are participants in the same reference data set, then institutions may be ranked according to SMR, parentheses lowest to highest. Disadvantages, 1, RACS is based largely upon expert opinion rather than objective evidence. 2, the measure steward has made reference to the possible release of RACS 2 levels.
Can I respond to each one of the disadvantages after you read them?
Definitely.
And the other thing is, can we please see it up on the screen?
It's box 49.
I'm actually working from the letter because I have the full letter. So the first one, RACS 1, is based largely on expert opinion rather than objective evidence. While we agree that, yes, RACS 1 surgical risk categories were based on partly expert opinion, we also used empirical evidence from 2 large databases, one administrative and one clinical. And then the decisions about the additional clinical factors to be included in the methodology were entirely empirical, no judgment at all.
On every 4.
Okay. Comment 2, the measure steward has made reference to the possible release of RACS 2 levels in 2010, which presumably will supplant and thus render obsolete the current system.
Well, it is true that we're working on a revision. It won't be 2010, but our understanding is that since the steward of each measure is required to revise on a regular basis, this would be our planned revision.
Okay. Comment 3, development of RACS 1 is based on administrative data now more than 10 years old. The measure description describes the use of at least 4 independent disparate reference data sets, the majority of which depend entirely upon administrative data. Many important frequently performed procedures do not have ICD-9 codes, for example, Norwood Stage 1, and thus they must be inferred from aggregate codes in administrative data sets. Coding of patient factors such as non-cardiac anomalies may be quite variable between data sets, and these factors lack rigorous, consistent definitions.
Well, we agree that we did use administrative data, but we also used a clinical database in deriving RACS 1 categories. So it's a combination of both. We do agree that there are limitations with administrative data, but it has been widely used for benchmarking, and it's a good source of population-based information.
Okay. Hold on. I sort of lost my place here. I'm just scrolling down. Where was I?
4.
Many pediatric cardiac surgical procedures cannot be classified by RACS 1, specifically 85%. In the previous mentioned study by Jenkins, only 4,000 of 7,000, 60% could be placed in one of 6 categories.
Okay, so the 85.8% that can be categorized in the SPS database. What we want to point out about that is that we intentionally exclude some procedures. RACS is not meant to capture everything. So, for example, we excluded rare procedures, complex reoperations in older patients. We excluded procedures where the risk factors for death were something other than the procedure itself, or the main drivers of death were something other than the procedure itself, like premature newborns undergoing PDA ligation. And we also never intended it to be representative of all pediatric cardiac surgery, so things like ICD and pacemaker surgery are not part of our method. It was only meant to capture congenital heart surgical procedures. So that the 85.8% not captured was never meant to capture all of those procedures. When most of those would be considered ineligible for RACS1 risk adjustment, not unable to be classified. And in our experience, in databases with codes that are more precise than ICD-9 codes, such as the Pediatric Cardiac Care Connections database, we've been able to classify more than 95% of congenital heart surgical procedures.
Sorry, that's why I came to
Okay.
And then the other issue about the 60% of procedures being placed into a risk category in the Jenkins study, that actually isn't accurate. We started out with 109 centers with 7,177 cases, but we only analyzed the 22 institutions that perform more than 100 procedures a year. So the 7,177 was never our denominator. The 4,318 cases were from 22 institutions only, not all 109.
Was there another comment?
Just a request to kind of move the screen up, please, so we can keep with you.
That was me, Howard, just doing a time check. We actually only have 7 more minutes by my watch left of the conference call. It doesn't look like we're going to get through everything. Obviously, we'll need to decide how we're going to continue the discussion. It may be that we schedule another conference call. Also, we need to give at least a few minutes for those who are on the public line to comment, if there's anyone there. Anthony, can you just check to see if there's anyone on the public line who'd like to make a comment?
Thank you. If you have a comment or question at this time, please press *1 on your touchtone telephone. Again, if you have dialed in on the public line and you have a question or a comment at this time, please press *1 on your touchtone telephone. And we'll pause for just a moment to give everyone a chance to signal. And it appears we have no questions or comments from the public sector at this time.
Okay, thanks, Anthony. So we've got 5 or 6 more minutes. Co-chairs, I'll leave it up to you how you want to use that. I'll just leave it with we're probably going to end up scheduling another conference call, and we will, be in touch with the committee to decide when that will be. And we'll just move on from there.
Continue reading that critique of measure 21 so everyone can hear it and so Boston can respond.
I'm sorry, Mars, can you say that again, please?
I was just asking, when you had that time reminder, you were stopped at number 4.
Right.
In that critique, I was asking whether you were going to continue so that the committee could hear the rest and so that the Boston people could respond to the rest.
Yeah, I think I'll finish up with 5, which looks like it's the last one, but then we have multiple more boxes as well. So I'm not sure I can get through all of this. But I think
it would help we could forward our responses to the committee to prepare. We've prepared a very detailed response to each of the disadvantages that were outlined and other comments and boxes, if that will help.
I think that'd be very helpful.
Yes, Nina, that will be extremely helpful. And we may be able to do some of it via email, so we would keep the developers in on the communication. We'll just have to decide from this end what the best way to go about continuing the discussion is, and we'll keep everyone in the loop on that.
Well, we would just really like an opportunity to answer any further questions that might come in up based on our responses that we provide, and allowing, you know, comments and discussion.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we should set up another call to review your comments. I think we also need another call to look at the competing volume measures, as well as finish up the discussion on the competing mortality measures.
Right. Hopefully we'd be able to get those done in one call, but I will.
Right.
We'll definitely start working on. We'll send you guys out a survey, how we usually do, and try to get something. Maybe I'm not sure how feasible this is, but maybe within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay. I think we should start with volume because I think we can get that done pretty quickly.
Okay.
And then move on to the mortality.
Okay.
Discussion.
In the meantime, though, Nina, if you guys want to provide your comments and response that will help facilitate the discussion, we can kind of get started. Having those already been reviewed?
Sure, we'd be happy to if that will help move this along.
Yeah, so I'll follow up with you guys and kind of let you know the timeline we're looking at based on when the call is going to be scheduled and then when the comments need to be to us. So I'll follow up with you guys on that. So we've got 3 minutes left. I'm not sure how much more we'll be able to get through, but co-chairs, however you guys want to use the last time, if you want to use it all up, I'm fine with that as well.
Howard, it's up to you if you'd like to continue or just...
You know, I think the comments from the letter from the RACS measure developers will be helpful in this. I think that will help move this discussion forward. So I'm not sure we can gain any more in the next 2 minutes.
Okay. That's fine. AHRQ measure developers, I'm sorry we didn't get to you guys today, but we'll definitely keep you guys as well in the loop on when the next call is because we would like you guys there to help give the committee a little bit of background on the measure since to this point, obviously, they've been focused on the measures that were submitted for this project. And, again, I don't know if John or Jeffrey, whoever's there, will definitely keep you guys in the loop as, you know, this develops. So thank you guys for joining the call today. I'm sorry if we didn't get to it.
No problem. Just any way we can help.
Okay, thanks.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.